the Year of the Dragon, celebrating the Chinese New Year and the life of the Chinese community in Maine. Gongxi, Gongxi, Chinese New Year greetings to you. I'm Jonathan Smith, and today we celebrate the Year of the Dragon. We'll take a look at the customs and traditions of the holiday and how it's celebrated both in China and Maine. We'll also discuss the Chinese community here. As with many other ethnic groups in the state, their numbers are relatively small, but more people of Chinese background have been coming here in recent years, often to attend an American school or to build business connections. Joining me in the studio, Connie Zhu. She worked on a report on Asians in Maine when she was a policy analyst with the Maine Center for Economic Policy. She now works as a translator and consultant, as well as a Chinese instructor at Colby College. Craig Dietrich. He's professor emeritus of Chinese history at the University of Southern Maine and a founding member of the Chinese American Friendship Association of Maine. And Suzanne Fox, president and founder of Fox Intercultural Consulting Services. This is Maine Calling. Connie, Craig, Suzanne, thank you for joining us today. Connie, I want to start with you. Celebrating the New Year in China is a really big deal. Can you give us a sense of what the celebrations were like yesterday there?
Sure. First of all, Happy New Year to all the Chinese in Maine. 祝龙年吉祥如意. Celebration of the Chinese New Year or the Spring Festival can be traced back as long as 4,000 years. But a lot of the traditional rituals are still in practice today. So if you're in China now, you will still see a lot of decorations in red. It's everywhere, it's red. People, especially kids, will wear clothes in red, and there will be red calligraphy banners posted on every door. They are blessings and auspicious sayings, and also red paper cuts posted on windows, and lots of red lanterns along the streets, and a lot of firecrackers and fireworks. And of course, for the kids, the best thing is that little money in a red packet, wishing them a good year ahead. All these things are still in practice today in China. But the overwhelming feature of the celebration these days is the amount of fireworks and firecrackers. When the new year, let's say probably from 11 o'clock at night till 1 o'clock the next morning, basically whether you're sleeping or not sleeping, you can't sleep. The sound of the firecrackers is deafening in every town and city, and the fireworks literally keep the sky bright.
Give me a sense of the buildup. I mean, is this weeks ahead of time, or people just can't wait for this day to get here?
Oh, yes, that's a good question. Actually, traditionally, celebration of Chinese New Year was never just a day. It used to start from the end of the 12th month, and it will go through first half of the first month of the new year. This is all based on the lunar calendar. And New Year normally falls on the second new moon after the winter solstice. So it usually falls in January or early February, according to the Gregorian calendar. So in China these days, normally people can get at least a week off or sometimes 2 weeks. And because these days there's so many migrant workers and a lot of people working away from their hometowns and other cities. So I'm sure some of you have seen pictures of the massive rush at train stations in China, people all trying to go home to be with their families. So it is the huge buildup, and people celebrate it for at least a whole week.
That's Connie Zhu. She is a freelance translator and consultant, as well as an adjunct language instructor at Colby College. Turning to you, Craig Dietrich, we received an email this morning from somebody who wrote two expressions that make me cringe every time I hear them. One, the American people, when politicians say it, and two, Chinese New Year, when the media say it without clarifying that it's also Lunar New Year. Do you make such a distinction as well? And I heard Connie mention it's also called Spring Fest.
Spring Festival.
Spring Festival.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think just as a shorthand thing, people are often just use the term Chinese New Year. But of course, it's also common in all of the countries that were influenced by Chinese culture and Korea particularly, and Vietnam. And in Vietnam, people of a certain age remember the name word Tet from Tet Offensive. That's Chinese New Year in Vietnam. I think in Japan it's not practiced, not observed so much. More the Gregorian 1st of January is more celebrated in Japan. But so it's not just Chinese New Year, but in a sense culturally it derives from China and the influence that China had on these surrounding countries.
Now, have you been abroad to witness one of these New Years?
I lived in Taiwan in the 1960s and 1970.
What was the celebration?
Well,
like that?
It was somewhat similar to what Connie just said, although I think not as much. Well, there was quite a bit of fireworks. The thing that I remember as being a foreigner there was that basically all the stores were closed. And if you know, it is such a family celebration, certainly was then and there in that society, that as outsiders, it was like you were just living in a vacuum almost.
Now that's Craig Dietrich. He's professor emeritus of Chinese history at the University of Southern Maine. Suzanne Fox, turning to you now, you're the founder of the Intercultural Consulting Services. Explain to us what you do there.
The focus of my company is building connections between Maine and China. Fox Intercultural Consulting Services, I started that about 10 years ago, and now I'm also in a new company called Maine Asia, which is working more on the business side of relations between Maine and China. And it's just been a really exciting time in the recent years to see how much we can learn from each other and the possibilities of making connections between Maine and China, both in education and in business, and all these great things that Maine has to offer in terms of clean environment and luxury products and food products and just helping sort of put Maine on the map inside China.
That's Suzanne Fox. She's president and founder of Fox Intercultural Consulting Services. I'm Jonathan Smith. You're listening to Maine Calling. Join the conversation 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Send us an email, talk@mpbn.net. Join us on Twitter, @MaineCalling, or leave a comment or message on our Facebook page. Search Maine Calling on Facebook. We're going to go to a clip now. When I was doing a little research for this show, I came across this, thought this was interesting. Let's have a listen.
I've been working on the railroad all the long day. I've been working on the railroad just to pass the time away. Can't you hear the whistle blow and rise up so early in the morning? Can't you hear the captain shout and kind of blow your horn?
Do you know who that was?
Pete Seeger?
He wishes. That was American billionaire, wealthiest man in the world, Warren Buffett, playing the ukulele. We're not sure where. It was on CCTV, China's, I guess, biggest television station.
Yes, Central Television.
He did this to help celebrate the new year. In the background was, I guess he has a room that's a giant train set, and he's singing about the train, such a huge part of Chinese commerce these days, moving people around. Suzanne, what do you make of that? I mean, that speaks to the relationship between not just Maine and China, but our country, our two nations.
That's right. I don't have the exact number, and maybe one of you do, but the number of Chinese millionaires and billionaires and just the rising middle class in China. If you go into a bookstore in China, you're going to see Warren Buffett's book. You're going to see all
Bill
these
Gates.
Books on Bill Gates and how to make a million.
Steve Jobs,
entrepreneurialism. I just got this fact, this statistic that 20 million people are going to be joining the rising middle class a year in China. So, I mean, it's just really, for me, who have been going to China for almost 30 years and to see coming out of the blue and green mouse suits of the 80s when the door to the West had just opened to where people now are making enough money to send their one child to come to the United States, to come to Maine or places in New England to get an American education and to really the American dream to make some money and to send their child to school and to college. And so it's just really mind-blowing to see this all happening.
When they come to Maine, what are some of the obstacles or impediments they may face? And you help them work through this.
I think a lot of it, for the students at least, it has to do with just cultural differences. I mean, they're coming from cities of 27 million people or a small village of 3 million people They're coming from classrooms of 60 kids in one class where there's no place for classroom participation. There's not any expectation of owning an idea and writing your own creative essay, and to suddenly come into a school, a small private school or a public school. I liken it to as if they've just fallen from Mars. I mean, to show up and be suddenly in a small school, and how do you maneuver through how to succeed? And so what I do is help a lot of schools just with these cultural landmines on how to do it right and how to set up a program that is truly integrated and the kids succeed.
That's Suzanne Fox, president and founder of Fox Intercultural Consulting Services. Turning back to you, Craig, tell me what the Chinese and American Friendship Association is all about.
Well, we actually are almost 25 years old, founded in 1998, by the way, in the year of the dragon.
And we'll get to that in a minute. It's very important in the zodiac calendar, the year of the dragon. We'll talk to that.
What we do, the reason we exist is as a cultural and educational organization to make Maine people more aware of China and vice versa, and to help where we can to where people from China or Chinese Americans or whatever come to Maine. So it's just generally we are a nonprofit educational organization. Now, under our wing is an organization called the Chinese School, the CAFAM, C-A-F-A-M is our acronym, the CAFAM Chinese School. And they have been offering for at least 15 years classes on Saturday to children to learn about Chinese language and Chinese culture. Many of these children being the adoptive children in families in Maine adopted from China. So we have several kind of a broad mandate that we set for ourselves.
How many members has it increased over the years?
Well, it's stabilized over the last few years, maybe 120 memberships, which are mostly our families.
Okay, and we'll talk a little bit more about the learning English language. There is, and we posted this on our Facebook page, the Maine Historical Society and the Camden-Rockport Historical Society posted some photos from back at the last turn of the century about Chinese coming to Maine, and there's fascinating pictures from 100 years ago, and a lot of them are these Chinese people learning English or with their English classes. I want to go back to Connie for a second to have her explain a little bit about the symbol of the dragon and that why that is so important this year.
Well, there are 12 zodiac signs, and dragon is one of them. But of course, among them all, dragon is the most important symbol, because Chinese, wherever they are in China or overseas, all consider themselves descendants of the dragon. And the origin kind of has something to do with China being an agricultural society a long time ago. So dragon is a creature that dwells in the water, controls the weather. So, of course, farmers all have to pay respect to dragon so they can have enough rain. They won't have any drought. They won't have any floods. So dragon basically becomes this ultimate symbol of power. You see the images of dragon on emperor's robes. If you've ever been to Forbidden City, there are just images of dragon carved everywhere, painted everywhere. And it also becomes almost synonym to power, to, let's say, I mean, lobster is actually called king a dragon shrimp in Chinese, longxia, you know, meaning the biggest, you know, shellfish in the seawater. So,
what was last year's symbol?
Rabbit.
Well, it was rabbit. All right, and I've actually read that in the Chinese government is expecting perhaps a 5% increase in population because people want to have their children born in the year of the dragon. I'm Jonathan Smith. You're listening to Maine Calling on MPBN. We're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, your comments and questions, send us an email, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And while you're there, why don't you friend us? You can also give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Stay with us.
Governor LePage delivers his first State of the State address this evening. MPBN Radio and Television and MPBN.net will broadcast and stream it live starting at 7. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Join A.J. Higgins, Susan Sharon, and me for live coverage of the speech and reaction from leading Democrats. Also this evening on both MPBN Radio and Television, live coverage at 9 of President Obama's State of the Union address and the Republican response. Join us starting at 7 this evening.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Portland Ovations presenting China's Golden Dragon Acrobats at 7 p.m. on Friday, March 9th at Merrill Auditorium. PortlandOvations.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jonathan Smith. Today we're talking about the Chinese New Year and the Chinese community here in Maine. In the studio with me, Connie Zhu, adjunct language instructor at Colby College, Craig Dietrich, founding member of the Chinese and American Friendship Association of Maine, Suzanne Fox, president of Fox Intercultural Consulting Services. Connie, back to you. Can you talk a little bit more about some of the customs and traditions associated with the Chinese New Year or the Lunar New Year?
Sure. One thing we cannot skip is 年夜饭, meaning the dinner on the New Year's Eve. That's almost like a combination of Thanksgiving dinner and New Year's Eve celebration. So the difference is the 年夜饭 starts basically, when it gets dark, and it goes all the way till the dawn, when to welcome the New Year. And multi-generations get together, eat, drink, play games, talk, listen to music. Well, of course, these days, watch TV. And it's just a huge family celebration that lasts for hours.
I was just going to jump in that sure. I have such fond memories of living in Beijing in the 80s and making dumplings with my friends' families and going up on the roof at midnight, and just it felt like if you are standing on Mars and looking down on Earth, and just the place was on fire, and it was so really special.
Did you any of you do anything special yesterday that you want to share?
I made dumplings with friends, absolutely.
And actually, I was having a little celebration with Colby students on the campus yesterday and introduced some of them to the traditional Chinese game, Mahjong.
Yeah. Oh, Mahjong.
Excellent. We're going to go to the phones now. We've got Sally on the line from Portland. Sally, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Sally. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, my question is, do any of them knows what kind of predictions about this dragon year they heard about from Chinese media sources.
Any, I've got a lot of head shaking no here. Are you familiar, Sally?
That's why I'm calling.
Yeah, I'm afraid we don't. Is that part of the tradition?
I can guarantee it will be a good year.
It will be a good year. There we have a guarantee.
It has to be a strong year because it's the year of the dragon, right?
Okay, yes. So how? In what way?
I did see something about a fortune teller talking about it would be a very good year for Al Pacino because I think he was born in the year of the dragon. But I think Vladimir Putin is supposed to have a very bad year, and I'm not sure if he was the year of the dragon, but he's up for election. So, there's lots of predictions out there, but... Craig, why don't we go to you and talk about some of the celebrations happening here in Maine?
There's one happening this Saturday up in Bangor. There's an organization there called the Chinese Language and Cultural Center. And at 4 o'clock on Saturday Husson University, thank you. There is going to be a kind of a stage performance of various things. Now, if people were interested in following that up as what's involved and so forth, I think one would try to contact Husson University on the online.
We'll put some information on our website after the show.
Now, down here in the Portland area, as far as public celebrations, the Chinese and American Friendship Association, are putting on a big event on the 4th. Of February. That's a Saturday, so a week from this coming Saturday. That's going to take place at the Westbrook Performing Arts Center and the Westbrook Middle School, which is a beautiful, brand new facility they have there. It's going to be basically a day-long thing, starting at 10 o'clock in the morning and going until 3 in the afternoon. There will be 85 children from the Chinese school performing folk dances and folk songs. There will be activities for adults, food for thought. For example, we will have a panel on China-Maine connections. The head of that panel is former gubernatorial candidate Elliot Cutler and three other people with a lot of experience in China, one of whom is sitting here right next to me by the name of Suzanne Fox. So I can hardly wait to go to that. I think that's going to be a very interesting one. In addition, also for adults, we have Susan Connolly, who has written Foremost Good Fortune, a very highly regarded book about her family's experience in living in China, at which time she was diagnosed with cancer. And so it's a very touching and interesting story about this family, and she's going to talk about her book.
We'll have links to the events as well as to the book on our Facebook page. That's Maine Calling. I want to remind you that you're listening to Maine Calling. I'm Jonathan Smith. This is MPBN. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send us an email, talk@mpbn.net. Shoot us a tweet at Maine Calling or leave a comment or question on our Facebook page. Just search Maine Calling. To you, Connie, can you give us a sense of how many Chinese people are living in Maine?
Well, I don't have a specific figure. In Maine, as of 2010, there are about 13,571 people that are classified as Asian immigrants in Maine as of 2010. And among this group of Asian immigrants, the largest percentage belongs to Chinese, and the second is Filipinos, and the next is Asian Indians. Well, the percentage of Chinese Asian immigrants in Maine is still very small. It's only about 1% compared to 5.6% in the United States.
Do we have a sense, are the numbers staying the same, going up, down, any sense of?
It's been going up, but not, it was about only 0.7% in 2000, Asian immigrants in Maine. And 2010, it was 1%. Okay. So, you know, a small increase, but, you know, almost 40%.
Well, when I if I could jump in,
I
moved to Maine in 1968, and there was virtually no Chinese presence here, with the sole exception of a couple of restaurants. And there were virtually no Chinese people in Maine. Nowadays, there's hundreds of people that I know are Chinese, all kinds of Chinese restaurants. And so there has been a really dramatic increase in the visible presence of Chinese in Maine, even though the population numbers are not high. And of course, I'm trying to remember the exact day, somewhere between 2004 and 2008, in a time frame like that, over 600 children were adopted from China into Maine families. So that's another little group of people. And, of course, then there are increasing numbers of what we would call Chinese Americans, people often called ABCs, American-born Chinese, who are not immigrants. And so I don't know how they figure in the population statistics. But really, we are getting a much greater degree of diversity in that regard.
That's Craig Dietrich, founding member of the Chinese and American Friendship Association of Maine. Suzanne, do you have some thoughts on this?
Well, I was just going to – this is not the immigrant population, but just the number of Chinese students that are studying here now. They're not immigrants, but just high school students alone, I think the number is something like 500 high school students from China who are here, and I don't know have the numbers for university, but the hope is that some of them will study here and then choose to stay here.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Andrew on the line. Andrew, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, thank you for calling. Did you have a comment or question for our panel?
Yes. Last year, I think it was Skowhegan High School got a very bad write-up in a Chinese newspaper about its exchange program. for Chinese students. I think they were hoping to have a large number of Chinese students come over. Because of the article, they only ended up with a very small number of students coming over. I was wondering if either of the guests there had seen any effect, ongoing effect from that in the way of reduced students or bad press about Maine in China.
All right. Thank you, Andrew, for that call. Suzanne, do you have some?
Sure. I'm happy to comment on that because I've been involved. It was actually Millinocket and not Skowhegan. And there's been Chinese students at so many of the different private academies in Maine. And Millinocket was to be one of the first public schools that was going to be bringing Chinese students to study there. And there was some scathing articles that came out that really, really hurt the effort. But I think that anyone who's been involved with China, either education or business, knows that things take time to build relationships, to build trust. And I think that the thought of a student from a very polluted city in China to come to any place in Maine to get an American education. So I think, you know, we're working to turn that around and to build an international program in Millinocket and in different places in Maine. But that definitely hurt what we were trying to do with the negative press.
Well, can you give us some stories about or just experiences you've seen? You've been doing this for a long time of sort of building that trust or even, you know, what's it like when somebody from one of these polluted populated cities comes over here and comes to sort of pristine, cold Maine for the first time? Take us through that.
Well, I think what's going on inside China right now in terms of education reform, school reform, I liken it to the wild, wild west. It's really amazing to go over there and to see more and more schools in China that are looking to build international programs, that are looking for partners in the United States, and people who think that it's easy and quick and happen overnight. You can just build a program and students are going to come. That's not true. You really need to know that the people that you're working with on the other end are people that you can trust, that say that when they can build a program that they it just takes a lot of relationship building and trust and going over there a lot. I'm taking a group of educators in March to my bottom line when I talk to anybody who's thinking about building a new international program is that the first step is you got to go. You got to go over to China. You got to visit schools. You got to make connections. If you think that it's going to happen quickly, it's not, but it will happen because there's so much interest in China in building these relationships.
We received a comment on our Facebook page or from our Facebook page from Kim, who asked, did you know Bangor has a Chinese school? I am tutoring a lucky young boy whose parents value the ability to speak a foreign language. He takes Chinese at this school. Are you familiar with this?
Absolutely, yep.
Any thoughts, comments?
Well, this is the Chinese Language and Cultural Center that was founded by a woman named Jing Zhang, I think. And she's very, very aggressive and active in developing that school.
Any sense of how many students may be enrolled there?
I do not know.
Don't know.
There is such a thing as a Confucius Institute or Confucius Classroom that's supported by the Chinese government. And I think the Bangor Chinese Language and Cultural Center has taken that kind of title as well.
Yeah, so, I think I saw something new that it was just recognized and there was some sort of ceremony down at the United Nations. Yeah. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
You're listening to Maine Calling. I'm Jonathan Smith. With me in the studio, Connie Zhu, adjunct language instructor at Colby College. Craig Dietrich, founding member of the Chinese and American Friendship Association of Maine. Suzanne Fox, president of Fox Intercultural Consulting Services. Join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Send us an email, talk@mpbn.net. Send us a tweet, @MaineCalling, or leave a comment on our Facebook page. Just search for Maine Calling. We did receive an email from Beattie in Camden, who asked, I guess he'd seen some news reports saying fireworks are toxic and that it could be a problem in places celebrating the Chinese New Year. Have any of you ring a bell? Any of you hear this?
Well, safety is an issue around Chinese New Year. The tradition is so strong, it's very hard for the government to curb the enthusiasm, let's put it that way. But yes, every year there are accidents and that's one of the unfortunate side effects.
They were banned for a while. They were there in the 80s when I lived there. And then for a number of years, they were banned. And just, I think, 5 years ago, they brought them back. And I had lunch yesterday with the vice president of the U.S.-China Business Council, who's from Maine but who lives in Beijing, and he was talking about just the 2 weeks of nonstop. And it's exciting and fun the first night and then the second night. And then he said it's just nonstop fireworks the whole time.
Right. They were banned within certain city limits. Mm-hmm. But I think at large, it was never banned. Oh, it's impossible to ban fireworks or firecrackers in China.
Quite the undertaking. But we're going to take just another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
Tonight, it's an NPR News special, live coverage of President Obama's State of the Union address. I'm Melissa Block. Join me for in-depth analysis and reaction from members of Congress. You'll also hear the Republicans' response to the president's speech. It's an NPR News special, President Obama's State of the Union address.
The State of the Union gets underway this evening at 9 o'clock. And that's following the governor's State of the State address and Democratic response, which gets underway at 7. Join us today at 1 o'clock for the Commonwealth Club of California, The Great Disruption. Guests are Paul Gilding, professor, Cambridge University Program for Sustainability Leadership, and Richard Heinberg, senior fellow of the Post-Carbon Institute. Gilding asserts that this great disruption started in 2008 with spiking food and oil prices and dramatic ecological changes such as melting ice caps. It is not simply about fossil fuels and carbon footprints. Heinberg, author of The End of Growth, agrees we have come to the end of economic growth version 1.0, a world economy based on consumption and waste, where we lived beyond the means of our planet's ecosystems and resources. That's coming up on the Commonwealth Club of California today at 1 o'clock.
Welcome back. I'm Jonathan Smith, and you're listening to the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. Today on the program, the Chinese community in Maine. Share your thoughts. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net. Send us a tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment on our Facebook page. With me in the studio, Connie Zhu, former policy analyst with the Maine Center for Economic Policy, who is now a freelance translator and consultant. Craig Dietrich, professor emeritus of Chinese history at the University of Southern Maine. And Suzanne Fox, president of Fox Intercultural Consulting Services. Connie, you wanted to pick up on something that Craig was saying earlier about what the Chinese are doing here in Maine, what lines of work
they're
in. Yes,
Professor Dietrich was saying that he has seen a dramatic increase of Asian immigrants in Maine, including Chinese. And I just want to echo that's very true. And there are over 200 Asian restaurants in Maine right now, and they Asian immigrants, including Chinese, work in every sector of Maine's economy, not just Chinese restaurants. Actually, a lot of them work in high-tech industries. They were companies like IDEX, Fairchild Semiconductor, and Jackson Lab. And I like to mention that Jackson Lab has just welcomed the first Chinese CEO and president, Mr. Edison Liu. We're very proud of that. And part of the reason why MECEP, Maine Center for Economic Policy, wanted to do this report to highlight Asian immigrants' contribution to Maine's economy is that Maine's workforce is facing critical challenge. It's relatively older and it needs critical technology retooling, and Chinese immigrants are relatively younger, better educated. They definitely add a boost to Maine's economy, and of course exposure to Chinese immigrants in Maine, I'm sure, will help boost foreign trade with China as well.
Suzanne,
I'm sure
you seeing this as well?
Yeah, no, definitely. I was just going to comment that I was at the Maine Medical Research Center, and some of the senior research professors were all from mainland China and doing some great research on different cancer and things.
Craig, as a Chinese history professor, can you talk a little bit about what brought the Chinese here 100, 150 years ago?
Starting really in the middle of the 19th century, economic opportunity, although you have to recognize that at the beginning it was a very small number of people, and really from just one area of China, southern China, around the Canton.
Do we know why that was? Why just that one area?
China was, far away, a closed country. This, the United States was just, developing in the middle of the 19th century on the west. Of course, it would be to the West Coast that they would typically come. So it was just a long way and difficult to get here and so forth. By about 1860, however, we're beginning to get this trickle of people in. A lot of people don't know that what is now Shaw's Supermarkets was founded by a man named George Shaw. His employee in his first business, which was a tea shop, was Afu Feng, who was a Chinese guy and who then established his own business. So the first business in Maine was really a tea shop established by a Chinese man. About 1880, there were some restaurants started appearing, and gradually then laundries. And there were a sprinkling of other activities. And now, one of the things was that in 1882, there was an Immigration Act which restricted immigration specifically from China.
That was the first time that this country banned people from one specific nation.
Yes.
The Chinese Exclusion Act.
The Chinese Exclusion Act.
How long was that in effect?
Well, it was followed by several other laws that expanded and modified. And really, the whole thing didn't change dramatically till 1960s. And that was the time at which much larger numbers of Chinese and other people began to come into the United States and come into Maine. So that's kind of the last phase. However, there was a period in the early 20th century when families started establishing themselves in Maine. And one of the things that one of our Chinese and American Friendship Association members by the name of Gary Libby has done is dig out the history of these people. And amazingly, one of them was a woman named Toy Lin Goon, who was America's Mother of the Year in 1952 and was received by First Lady Bess Truman in the White House and got a ticker tape parade in New York and so forth because she had raised, as a widow who owned a laundry, she had raised eight children and sent every one of them through college.
Wow.
And so that was quite amazing.
That's Craig Dietrich, Professor Emeritus of Chinese History and founding member of the Chinese and American Friendship Association of Maine. Join our conversation. We have a couple phone lines open. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Or send us an email, talk@mpbn.net. And we did receive an email from Alex who asked, why aren't there any Chinatowns in Maine? I'm new to Maine. Is that true?
Well, roughly, yeah, that's probably true. There, in the early years, there was an area right around Congress Square. Monument Square, where a lot of the Chinese lived in rooms. There was a Chinese Hong or association for a few years in the 1920s, but I think the population of Chinese was never that large. And of course, in our day, everything is really suburbanized. So there's just not the Chinese people that I know are scattered here and there, and not concentrated in a ghetto or Chinatown.
But don't they have that walking tour that you can do in Portland?
What's the walking tour?
Craig, you should just address
that. Gary Libby, the person that I mentioned, has identified various buildings in the Portland area that were either former restaurants or laundries or other businesses or where people lived. And through the Maine Historical Society, one can contact and get that tour and go through and see where the various sites were these people congregated in those years.
I'm going to mention again, we have a link on our Facebook page to an image called Chinese in Maine, images from the Maine Historical Society and the Camden-Rockport Historical Society. I think they're about 100 or so old photographs. It's just a fascinating look. Are you familiar with this?
If I might add, nowadays, too, there are other organizations. There's a Chinese Gospel Church, very well established now in West Falmouth. There's a True Buddha Society in Saco.
What exactly is a True Buddha Society?
Well, it's basically a Buddhist temple. I am not sure how you would characterize it as a Buddhist form of Buddhism. Although I've been there and participated in one of their events. But I'm sure they, too, by the way, are having their own New Year's
celebrations. Mm-hmm. Suzanne, do you find that Maine has a very welcoming attitude?
Well, I was just going to echo one
of
other
course,
thing that Craig
ahead.
Said. It's interesting. I went to college here in Maine and then lived in Beijing and Shanghai and then in California. When you're in California, you've got your finger on the pulse, trying everything. And moving back here 12 years ago and wondering, what am I going to do and where's any China-related things? And it has been really exciting this past 10 years to see. First was CAFM, the Chinese and American Friendship Association. But there's a lot of momentum right now with the work with what's happening up in Bangor with the Confucian Classroom, with these Chinese New Year's organizations, with just people who are really committed to building Maine-China connections.
How much is the state government involved in that?
I'm not one to comment. I'd say very little also.
Not so much.
I know I've worked with the Department of Maine Tourism to try to, we have this small little campaign to, again, put Maine on the map. We have all the materials translated into Chinese and a network of Mainers who are living in China that are all connected to us. And they're all happy to, when I go over with groups from Maine, they're always happy to get some blueberries or lobster or just some.
We'll have to reach out to them for our next show on this.
Exactly,
let's go back to the, I'm sorry, Connie, you want to say something?
Yes, well, as a Chinese in Maine, I would like to thank all the Mainers who have helped me during the last 20 or so years. I would have to say that Mainers are very hospitable, are very kind, and on the personal level, Mainers have helped a lot of Chinese, get acclimated here. But of course, Maine traditionally hasn't been very exposed to Asian culture, so that definitely builds on a challenge for a Chinese to live here. So I'm very glad to see the increase of Chinese students here, the number of schools that are teaching Chinese language these days. I think all of that will help future Chinese immigrants to get settled here.
Super.
And
feel more
welcome here.
I'm going to try and get it. Sorry to cut you off. I'm going to try and get in one more quick call. Brian from Cape Elizabeth. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi. Did you have a quick question for our panel?
I recall reading in the New York Times in the late 1960s and early 70s a political issue regarding Chinese immigration, which obviously followed the Chinese Exclusion Act, and that is the concept of paper sons. And I wondered if someone could...
Brian, thank you for your question. Anybody familiar with that?
Paper sons.
Perhaps it alludes to, because of the Immigration Reform Act then, the priority gave to... family reunion, meaning if you have family members or relatives in China, then they can come and immigrate to the United States. So maybe that gave rise to this phenomenon of paper son, meaning it's only son on the paper. It's not really a child, you know. Don't quote me on that.
All right. Thank you for your call, Brian. And Connie, Craig, and Suzanne, I want to thank you for joining us today. Connie Zhu is former policy analyst with the Maine Center for Economic Policy. She is now a freelance translator and consultant, as well as an adjunct language instructor at Colby College. Craig Dietrich is professor emeritus of Chinese history and founding member of the Chinese and American Friendship Association of Maine. Suzanne Fox, founder and president of Fox Intercultural Consulting Services. Today's program was produced by Keith Shortall and Cindy Hahn. Cindy also answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board. We had help from Rich Tozier and the MPBN web team. You can listen to this conversation and previous editions of Maine Calling by visiting mpbn.net. Click on the radio tab. I'm Jonathan Smith. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.